Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to As It Is. I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Anna Mateo.
Millions of people have been displaced from their homelands around the world. These refugees face day-to-day problems. Simply finding a safe place to sleep or food to eat can be a struggle.
Today, we explore the life of refugees in two African areas. Later in the show, we hear about a refugee success story. But first, we learn about thousands of people from the Central African Republic who were forced to flee to Cameroon.
These refugees are escaping violence that continues even after a peace deal between the Muslim Salika and Christian anti-Balaka militias. Christopher Cruz tells us more.
The refugees are finding relative peace in Cameroon's refugee camps. But they are struggling with growing humanitarian needs, such as finding food. And some people in Cameroon are not happy that the refugees are there. The United Nations says the number of refugees entering Cameroon has dropped from 10,000 a week to about 8,000. The Cameroon Red Cross says fewer people have been arriving because they are suffering from malnutrition and do not have the strength to travel. Constancia Taribi is with the UNHCR, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees. She says the agency is working with other groups to care for the refugees. Francis Ndengo says some people in eastern Cameroon, even local government officials, are abusing the refugees.
La difficulté majeure que nous rencontrons, c'est la libre circulation.
He says the refugees cannot move out of the camps even when they are hungry. He says Cameroonian security forces do not accept the food cards given by the UNHCR as identification documents. He says some of the refugees are asked to make payments to stay in Cameroon. He says some local people ask them to work on their farms, but then refuse to pay them once the work is done. Constancia Taribe says if Cameroon would accept the UNHCR identification documents, some of the problems of the refugees would be solved. Augustin Dolly Debat is a retired engineer from Bangui. He says the refugees will not be able to return home anytime soon. He says that, for now, Cameroon is safer than their home. The UNHCR estimates there are now more than 200,000 refugees from the Central African Republic in Cameroon. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Welcome back to As It Is. In the first half of our program, we heard about the difficulties facing refugees from the Central African Republic. Now we hear about another refugee story. Majur Juwach survived civil war in Sudan and life as a refugee in Africa. His life's road took him through dangerous places. That road finally led him to the U.S. and a career as a chess teacher. Ana Mateo and Jonathan Evans bring us this man's story of survival and success.
In the middle of the 1980s, thousands of boys from Sudan escaped the country's civil war by walking. They walked for weeks, for months, for more than a year. They walked up to 1,500 kilometers across three countries. They are the so-called Lost Boys of Sudan, and they had little time for games.
But one of them did learn a game to help him ignore his hunger in a refugee camp. The game was chess. This boy became an expert. Soon this lost boy of Sudan found his way to the United States. And now he teaches chess to children in the New York City area. His name is Majur Jowach, and he has come a long way in miles and in experience.
Today, Mr. Jowach shares his chess skills with students in public and private schools, in chess camps, and at other events.
It's very important to control the center of the board.
Mr. Jowach is from the Dinka tribe. During Sudan's civil war, he was forced out of the country. He fled to Ethiopia with 20,000 other lost boys.
Mr. Jowach describes a dangerous trip where half of the young travelers did not survive. The boys had to kill wild animals for food. Sometimes they had no water to drink. Mr. Jowach says they walked almost 1,000 miles.
They made it to Ethiopia. Then civil war broke out in that country. Majur Jowach and his friends had to flee again. Many died trying to cross a river because they did not know how to swim.
Majur Jowach landed in Kenya and lived in a refugee camp. It was there that he taught himself to play chess. He spoke to the Wall Street Journal newspaper about playing chess there. He said the United Nations had provided the chessboard. He said he played to avoid thinking about his constant hunger. But he grew to love the game, and soon he was defeating everyone he played.
In 2004, Majur Jowach arrived in the United States. He began working as a security guard. He continued to play chess. He told the Wall Street Journal that he went to a chess tournament in New York while visiting a friend there. He had only meant to watch the tournament. Instead, he entered it. He finished as tournament champion.
That competition led to the connections that began his life as a chess teacher. Mr. Jowach says he believes chess is more than a game. He says chess helps prepare young people for life by teaching them patience and math skills. Majur Jowach still has a big goal ahead of him. That goal is to become an international chess master.
With his skill, patience, and strength of mind, Mr. Jowach's supervisor and co-workers say they are sure he will reach his goal. I'm Ana Mateo.
And I'm Jonathan Evans.
Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Mario Ritter.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
Thank you. Susan Clark with the special English program, Words and Their Stories. A woman from Japan was telling a friend about her trip to the United States. The woman had visited major businesses and investment companies in New York City and Chicago. "I studied English before I left home," she said, "but I still was not sure that people were speaking English." Her problem is easy to understand. Americans in business are like people who are in business anywhere. They have a language of their own. Some of the words and expressions deal with the special areas of their work. Other expressions are borrowed from different kinds of work, such as the theater and movie industry. One such saying is, "Get your act together." When things go wrong in a business, an employer may get angry. He may shout, "Stop making mistakes. Get your act together." Or, if the employer is calmer, he may say, "Let us get our act together." Either way, the meaning is the same. Getting your act together is getting organized. In business, it usually means to develop a calm and orderly plan of action. It is difficult to tell exactly where the saying began, but it is probable that it was in the theater or movie industry. Perhaps one of the actors was nervous and made a lot of mistakes. The director may have said, "Calm down now. Get your act together." Word expert James Rogers says the expression was common by the late 1970s. Mr. Rogers says the Manchester Guardian newspaper used it in 1978. The newspaper said a reform policy required that the British government get its act together. Now, this expression is heard often when officials of a company meet. One company even called its yearly report, "Getting Our Act Together." The Japanese visitor was confused by another expression used by American business people. It is, "cut to the chase." She heard that expression when she attended an important meeting of one company. One official was giving a very long report. It was not very interesting. In fact, some people at the meeting were falling asleep. Finally, the president of the company said, "Cut to the chase." "Cut to the chase" means to stop spending so much time on details or unimportant material. Hurry and get to the good part. Naturally, this saying was started by people who make movies. Hollywood movie producers believe that most Americans want to see action movies. Many of their movies show scenes in which the actors chase each other in cars or in airplanes or on foot. "Cut" is the director's word for stop. The director means to stop filming, leave out some material, and get to the chase scene now. So, if your employer tells you to cut to the chase, be sure to get to the main point of your story quickly. This Words and Their Stories program was written by Jerry Watson. I'm Susan Clark. Thank you.
I'm Mary Tillotson.
And I'm Steve Ember with the VOA Special English Program, People in America. Today we complete our story about songwriter and singer Woody Guthrie.
Woody Guthrie grew up in Oklahoma and Texas during the 1920s. A short time later, many farms in these states failed. Extreme dry weather ruined the soil. This area became known as the Dust Bowl. Like many people, Woody left for California to find work. However, many people could only find work on farms, gathering fruit or other crops. These workers often lived in camps with poor conditions. Woody visited these farm worker camps. He played his guitar and sang songs he wrote that described the conditions at the camp he was visiting.
Labor union organizers in California found Woody Guthrie useful to their cause. They urged him to go to New York City to make recordings of his songs. Woody liked the idea and left California for New York City in 1940. There he met Alan Lomax, an expert on America's traditional music. Lomax worked for the United States Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. He collected and recorded traditional American folk music. When he heard Woody sing, Lomax knew he had found a true singer of American folk music.
Alan Lomax recorded many of Woody's songs for the Library of Congress. He also helped Woody find work in New York. One company agreed to record some of Woody's songs. The record he made was called Dust Bowl Ballads. The songs told stories of people who had lost their land. Many music critics praised Woody and the songs he wrote. Lomax also helped Woody get a job with CBS Radio. He sang and played folk music on a radio program that was broadcast across the United States.
Woody and several other musicians joined together to write political protest songs. One of these was Pete Seeger. Woody wrote and performed with a group called the Almanac Singers. Later, some members of the group formed the folk singing group called the Weavers. It was during this time in New York that Woody wrote what became his most famous song, This Land Is Your Land. He described the beauty and richness of America that he had seen during his travels. He believed America should be a place that belongs to rich and poor people alike. The first version of his song expressed opposition to private property.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for and me. As I went walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. I roamed and rambled, and I followed my footsteps through the sparkling sands of her diamond desert. All around me, a voice was sounding. This land was made for you.
In 1941, the Interior Department asked Woody Guthrie to write songs supporting the building of the Bonneville Dam on the Columbia River in Washington State. He wrote 26 songs in a month. The best known of these is Roll On Columbia.
Green Douglas fir where the waters cut through, down her wild mountains and canyons she flew, Canadian Northwest to the ocean so blue. It's Roll On Columbia, roll on, roll on Columbia, roll on, roll on Columbia, roll on, your power is turning our darkness to dawn. Roll on Columbia, roll on, other great rivers add power to you, Yakima Snake and the Clicky Tattoo, Sandy, Willamette, and Hood River, too. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. It's there on your banks that we fought many a fight, Sheridan's boys and the blockhouse that night. They saw us in death, but never in flight. Roll on, Columbia, roll on.
Woody Guthrie wrote a book about his early life in Oklahoma and Texas. It was published in 1943. He called it Bound for Glory. He described his childhood and the pain of watching his mother slowly becoming insane. He also wrote about his travels and the needy people he saw in many parts of America. One book critic wrote, "Someday, people are going to wake up and realize that Woody Guthrie and his songs are a national treasure, like the Yellowstone or Yosemite parks."
During World War II, Woody joined America's Merchant Marine. The Merchant Marine transported soldiers and supplies across the Atlantic Ocean to Europe. Later, Woody served in the Army. He returned to New York when the war ended. Woody's wife had left him a few years earlier. In 1945, he married Marjorie Matsia. She was a dancer with the Martha Graham Dance Group. Woody and Marjorie had a daughter named Kathy Ann. In 1950, Woody began writing songs for children. These became very popular. Here is one called Riding in My Car. It shows his sense of fun and humor.
Take me riding in the car, car. Take me riding in the car, car. Take you riding in the car, car. I'll take you riding in the car. Click, clack, open up the door, girls. Click, clack, open up the door, boys. Front door, back door, clickety, clack. Take you riding in the car.
One day, while Woody and Marjorie were away, a fire started in their house. Their daughter, Kathy Ann, was severely burned. She died the next day. Woody was crushed by her death. He remembered how his sister had died the same way. He was never the same after Kathy Ann died. He had trouble earning money. He began drinking alcohol. Woody and Marjorie had several more children after Kathy Ann's death, but their marriage ended. Woody Guthrie began noting something strange about himself. He found that the words he wrote often did not make sense, and he had sudden attacks of uncontrollable shaking. In 1952, doctors confirmed his worst fears. He had Huntington's chorea,
the same disease of the brain and nervous system that had killed his mother. Woody Guthrie was 40 years old.
There was no treatment for the disease. His condition got worse. In 1954, Woody Guthrie traveled one more time across America. He wanted to see the places where he had lived and the workers' camps where he had sung. Old friends had trouble recognizing him. Instead of a young man full of life, they saw an old man who could not speak clearly or control his shaking. Finally, he entered a hospital because he could no longer care for himself. But while he seemed to be forgotten, his music was not. By the late 1950s, folk music became popular again in the United States. More Americans began listening and playing the songs of Woody Guthrie. Young folk singers like Bob Dylan came to New York to visit Woody in the hospital. Dylan and others copied the way Woody sang and played the guitar. And like Woody, they wrote protest songs that called for social and political justice.
Woody Guthrie remained in the hospital until he died in 1967. His family and friends visited him each week. In the last years of his life, Woody could hardly speak. But his family and friends knew he still believed in the causes he had sung and written about all his life. They knew this because when they sang his songs, Woody's eyes would become brighter and his defiant spirit would shine through.
Having some hard traveling, I thought you knowed. I've been having some hard traveling way down the road. I've been having some hard traveling, hard rambling, hard gambling. Been having some hard traveling, Lord. I've been riding them fast rattlers, I thought you knowed. I've been riding them flat wheelers way down the road. I've been riding them blind passengers, dead enders, kicking up cinders. I'm hard traveling, Lord. I've been hitting some hard rock mining, I thought you knowed. I've been leaning on a pressure drill way down the road. Hammer flying, air hose sucking, 6 foot of mud and a sure been a mucking. And I've been hitting some hard traveling, Lord. I've been hitting some hard harvesting, I thought you knowed.
This VOA Special English Program was written by Shelley Gollist. It was produced by Paul Thompson. Our studio engineer was Audrius Regis. I'm Mary Tillotson.
And I'm Steve Ember. Join us again next week for another People in America program on the Voice of America.
I've been a-hitting some hard rock mining, I thought you knowed. I've been a-leaning on a pressure drill way down the road. Hammer flying, air hose sucking, 6 foot of mud and a sure been a-mucking. And I've been a-hitting some hard traveling, Lord. I've been a-hitting some hard harvesting, I thought you knowed. North Dakota to Kansas City, way down the road. Cutting that wheat, stacking that hay, and I'm trying to make about a dollar a day, and I've been having some hard traveling, Lord. I've been working at Pittsburgh Steel, I thought you knowed. I've been a-dumping that red-hot slag way down the road.